You're coming in here all right if you're getting this. Will you come back or any other interstate ham, Tasmania or any other state?
The ABC Social History Unit presents Loudspeakers, the fourth program in the series Bright Sparks, Australian Radio Stories, compiled by Stephen Rapley.
The first time I put TUW on the air was at Manly on Boxing Day 1922. I just turned the transmitter on and I played records for a couple of hours. Eventually I gave the phone number out and I received a call from Pennant Hills. It was a Saturday afternoon, if I remember rightly. And Pennant Hills rang me and said, "Get off the air, you're right on the 600-metre band. We haven't been able to receive a call from any ship for the 2 hours you've been transmitting."
Amateurs were the first on the air transmitting regular musical concerts before official broadcasting got underway in late 1923. Otto Sandel started broadcasting 2UW as a 19-year-old from a bedroom in his aunt's boarding house at Manly.
"Hello, hello. The time is 20 minutes past 10. This is Environmental Station, VK3DH. Aha, that's the atmosphere. Now, incidentally, here's a little music. It's Love Again by Louis Levy, the Gaumont British Symphony. Here we go.
The amateurs broadcast all over Australia. In Melbourne, Ivor Morgan's station, 3DH, was fitted out with a small disc-cutting machine. He used it to record pieces of this other side of broadcasting, which was to disappear from the band when the Second World War began.
3OV Camberwell. Jack Payne's band will play the rhythm-style foxtrot, Lazy Rhythm.
1 of the earliest voices of Australian radio was experimenter Charles McClurkin, who was regularly heard on Sunday evenings. In 1944, he recalled those first broadcasts with the ABC's Leslie Rees.
"What exactly caused you to start broadcasting? I mean with a human voice."
"I had been carrying out experiments with the voice in conjunction with Mr. Basil Cook of the Sydney Observatory. So many letters from listeners were received requesting further transmissions that I decided in 1921 to give regular transmissions every Sunday night."
"Which you did?"
"Yes. For some months, my station was the only one on the air, giving musical entertainment."
"Well, what was a typical 7:30 p.m. Sunday concert?"
"A typical concert would consist of possibly 8 or 9 of the latest gramophone record releases, interspersed with Morse code practice, a few facetious gags and recitations, and then some lectures on radio matters, which were mostly, of course, instructions to listeners on how to make their receivers. You must remember that in those early days, everyone had to make their own receiving apparatus, and I was constantly being asked to supply circuit diagrams and other details for building receiving sets."
"Well, did you get much response? How many listeners had you, do you think?"
"The results were really amazing, and the number of letters I used to receive necessitated having an assistant to answer them. On one special occasion, when I wanted to check up on the number of listeners, I asked my audience to write and let me know how many people were listening. Over 3,000 admitted listening in. When I say admitted, you'll realize that even then there were some who wouldn't pay for a license, and naturally they wouldn't like to admit they were listening, so that the audience must have been considerably greater than this number."
"And what was this special occasion you refer to?"
"It was in March 1923 when Miss Josie Melville broadcast from my station. She was then playing the title role in the musical comedy Sally. I think this really was the first time in Australia that a professional artist had gone on the air. Miss Melville visited my home at Strathfield. The transmitting apparatus was housed in the back garden, and to my astonishment, Josie was so overcome by the sight of all the weird contraptions that on opening her mouth to sing, not a sound came forth. However, she overcame her fright and sang two songs from Sally. Look for the Silver Lining, and You Can't Keep a Good Girl Down. When interviewed by the press next day, Josie said, "It is beyond me. The mysteriousness is too great. The thought that so many listeners, whom I could not see, quite overawed me."
Miss Melville said that before she started singing into the microphone, she felt more nervous than she had ever done on the stage. "It is beyond me," she said. "The mysteriousness is too great. I do not know why I was so nervous, but the thought that so many people who I could not see were listening to me quite overawed me."
Well, you also mentioned giving recitations. I'll bet you can't remember any of them at this distance.
Oh, yes. Many of them have to be repeated so often by request that I'm sure I'll be reciting them in the next world. Tongue twisters were always popular, and the one describing the death of my brother John had not only to be repeated often, but written out and forwarded to my listeners.
Well, what was that?
You must know that my brother John was courting a girl named Suey. He took Suey to the seaside to sue for Suey's hand. He sat by her side, she sat by his side, he sighed, she sighed, and the wind sighed, and there they sat, sighing side by side. She sighed for cider. He left the place he had beside her to get the cider, but she no sooner got the cider inside her than she lay down and died her. And he drank some cider, and he died, and the verdict was he died by Suey's side.
Good. Well?
Then there was the one about the sleeping car, and it went something like this. Now, a sleeping car is known as a sleeper, and sleepers for sleepers they keep. And sleepers run under the sleepers in which the sleepers in those sleepers sleep. Now, if a slop sleeps in a sleeper, and the sleeper beneath it goes pop, it's a logical cert that the slop will get hurt, because no sleeper sleeps like a slop. Of course, you have to have your teeth in, say these.
I'll say your head.
Like Otto Sandel's 2UW, many of the present-day commercial broadcasters began as amateur stations. Amateurs built and ran the transmitters, and the studio was invariably part of the house. Walter Exton's father, George, built 2XN, the first commercial station in Lismore, New South Wales, in 1930.
We had to think of things to do. It was a period of trial and error, and for instance, we all tried to do something to entertain. that was terrible sometimes. Anyhow, my father, for instance, I think you have something here, that he used to put a roll on the pianola, or I think in this particular instance, Love's Old Sweet Song, and he would sing. He would pedal this thing and sing Love's Old Sweet Song, and I got a recording of him on a disc. Little disc recorder that I had.
Father was a paddock bookmaker, but he used to bet at Randwick as well as in Brisbane, and he decided that Sydney was the best place for him, and he gave away Brisbane and came to live at Sydney. We had a house at Kensington for 6 months, and then we moved up to Victoria Road, Bellevue Hill, opposite Birriger Road, and being about the highest point at Bellevue Hill, it was an ideal spot for me for the radio transmitter, and I put up a couple of 80-foot masts, one on the front of the house and one at the rear of the house, and aerial strung between them, and I used my bedroom for the radio transmitter and receivers and that. And due to its position, probably, we used to get a lot of letters for what was known as the Dutch East Indies at that stage, receiving my signals over there. I used to play records Mostly Edison Diamond Disc records. I used to play those, so the quality of those was far superior to the ordinary lateral cut records that were on sale in those days. Sunday, we had a live show. We held at the house up in Victoria Road, Bellevue Hill. We had Ada Althouse used to come along and sing and play the piano, and then Hilda Grace also sing, but she was a marvellous pianist. And we had another chap named George Manuel used to come out regularly. He was a very, very good tenor. The artists used to all come out, and none of them got paid, with the exception of a couple of times where someone wanted to advertise something, and I used to charge them anything. All I used to get them to do was to pay the artists. And those artists that used to come along free for me used to get paid for once when we had something like that on.
Tell me about your neighbours at Bellevue Hill. How did they take to these 80-foot masts appearing?
I only had trouble with one neighbour. I had a neighbour next door there. Although we had curtains and everything else up to cut the noise down to an absolute minimum, he still complained and complained, and he had an empty kerosene tin and a great big stick, and he used to stand right next to the fence and with the kerosene tin over the top of the fence there, bashing hell out of it all the time we were broadcasting. He'd stay there for an hour or more. He wrote complaints to the council, and the Willara Council town clerk came up to see me about it, and he had a few bright ideas. He said that you're not allowed to put up radio masts and that without council permission. I said, oh, yeah. I said, can you put up a flagpole? He said, oh, yes, it's quite okay to put a flagpole up. I said, right, I'll put a flag on the top of both poles. So he didn't know what to do about that. But anyhow, this chap kept complaining and complaining, and every time we had live artists there, well, we had curtains up to keep the noise down. We could still hear him bashing the kerosene tin right against the fence, and the fence was only about 2 or 3 feet away from the window, and you couldn't stop all the noise. Some of it was being picked up by the microphones.
Eventually, Otto Sandel was forced to move his station to the city. 2UW became a commercial station. One of the legendary moments in amateur broadcasting circles in Melbourne is Bert Maddox's broadcast of a swearing cockatoo. Ivor Morgan missed recording this broadcasting highlight, but it did get a mention, along with Marconi, in the ABC's 1946 feature, The Hams.
Hello, listeners. This is experimental station 3EF Elwood. Now, we have a new announcer for you. A feathered one. Yes, this is the most famous cockatoo in St. Kilda, and his owner has kindly brought him along to let you hear him. Now, Cocky, say hello to the listeners. Come on. Hello, Cocky. Say hello.
Maybe he's a bit shy. Come on, Cocky. Hello. Hello. Cocky want a drink? Cocky want a drink? Well, that's funny. Not a word. He chatters all the time, no?
Well, perhaps he's mic shy. I'm sorry, listeners. He's just ruffling out his feathers and...
Ah, here he goes. Hello, boy.
What's the matter with you? You pop-eyed like a blazing...
Unfortunately, the day it happened, Mr. Maddox couldn't get to the control switch as quickly as we did, and listeners were rewarded, or shocked, with as fine a flow of language as any bullock driver could wish to command. The next morning, the chief inspector of wireless, Mr. J. Malone, and well-loved friend of every ham, stated with a twinkle in his eye,
So far, I haven't received an official report. But my department will go thoroughly into the matter. If necessary, the cockatoo will be brought into my office and questioned.
Leigh Cranch was second operator to Bill Seavers. Their broadcasts often relayed overseas radio stations for the local listeners. But one week, their highly sensitive receiver broke down and couldn't be repaired in time for the scheduled broadcast.
We announced on the Saturday that due to matters beyond our control, we could not relay the Japanese station. But as an alternative, we'd do a rebroadcast from China and thus keep faith with our listeners. Bill and I now applied our true amateur talents. We had no idea whatsoever of an existing Chinese broadcasting station, so we created one ourselves. Firstly, Bill managed to fit a switch which would reverse the direction of rotation of our gramophone motor. We then drilled a new spindle hole about 3/4 inch off-centre in an old 10-inch disc on which was recorded mainly voice and a bit of music. This was placed on the turntable using the off-centre position for the spindle, and after the announcements of the big rebroadcast from China, the whole thing was played off-centre, inside out, and back to front. Talk about a Chinese broadcast, it was near perfect.
They used to play records, play them back to back, and sometimes off centre, drill a hole off centre of the record, and play it like that.
How do you mean off centre?
It was no music at all. It sort of up and down like a fashion like that. Just an experiment. And one particular amateur.
What, by hand? Winding it round by hand?
So just to show how funny we can be. I mean, you say you had a typical. Most of the chaps used to use, now you probably want to know how we do the transmission of records over the air, right? Now, in those days, there used to be a cabinet type of record player and to wind it up. Well, we used to put the microphone, getting back to the old microphone or the telephone took off the phone, off the telephone, and put that right inside the horn of the gramophone and play it that way. Mind you, it wasn't very elaborate, but it worked all right.
Mai Seavers first met Bill on a blind date and then was a regular visitor to the Sunday afternoon radio concerts.
There used to be about 20 of us get there, you know, different ones, fellas and girls and that, and we'd all talk. And that's where I first met Stevens. And Ray Woods. That's where they used to do their announcing there.
So it was quite an event with people, social occasions.
Oh, yes, you know, it was quite a bit of a thrill and that, and we'd all have a talk and that. And then I eventually started to go out with Billy, and I'd stay overnight, and then he would go on the air later, and I would sort of announce and that and play records, and that's where they wanted to ring up and know who the little girl was because I had such a girlish voice.
30 request numbers tonight. Those we have not been able to satisfy, we'll try and get next week. Well, our final number is the Nuns Chorus from Casanova. If there's anybody who would like to give a report on this transmission, would they please ring FU1369. FU1369.
Different people would ring up, you know, and they'd say, or perhaps during the week, some of the girls at work would say to me, you know, oh, will you play such and such a number for us on Sunday? And I'd say, oh, well, if Billy's got it, okay, we'll play it. And then I'd play it, you know. I might say, oh, well, here you are, Joan or Dorothy, whatever it is, here's your record that you asked for.
We were not allowed to put over the air
the make of record that we played, that was advertising. Now, we got into trouble once before because the listener in wrote each amateur and asked them what their program was for Sunday. And we wrote and told them, and they gave them the information, plus the name of the record. The copyright people got the hear of it and wanted to charge us a fee. So we all trooped up to the Herald office and had a good old talk up there. Eventually everything was fixed up that the amateurs would be allowed to transmit, but still don't mention the make of record. But you can do it over the telephone if you want to. Which we did quite often.
You'd mentioned the title and the artist.
Oh, yes, and you say that, but not the make of record. No, sir. And yet the funny part about it, you're right, funny part about it, most of those records I played were obtained for quite a few of the record people in the city, plus movies, talkies when they were out. They used to send me records of various plays that's coming on and all that. And I used to, and not only that, it was one particular station, amateur station, I used to borrow records from that he would use on a Saturday night, and I'd go down to a Sunday and pick them up from him. But just the same, we sold quite a lot of records that way, because when they rang up on the phone, you tell them the make of the record and where you got them from.
Oh, yes. Well, we had thousands of people over the period of the 6 years who came down just to see it and to see a radio station being operated. And we puddled along through with the knowledge we had in putting over this and putting over that, playing the records, telling them to keep quiet because we didn't have any red light on the microphone. Oh, that was another thing too. You see, the transmitter was out in, he had a transmitting room which was at the other side of the garage. A special room built for it, and the studio was in the house, right? So when I didn't have any switch on the microphone at all. He used to control that, the microphone and the music, one after the other, from the amplifier that he had in the shed. And if he forgot to turn it onto the microphone, well, then we didn't get anything. But he used to turn it over to the microphone and then back to the record, over to the microphone, back to the record. And then there was this particular night about something or other, and we had one hell of a bust-up. And that, he came into the room and forgot to switch the microphone off, you see. And the whole thing was broadcast, you see. We were in the, I don't know, we yelled at each other about something or other, and it must have been great entertainment for the people listening in because they got the whole bit right through from the start to finish, he ticking me off and me ticking him off, and the, there it was. So that was something, it was one of those unwritten things that are still floating around in space somewhere.
Val Harris, an amateur from Western Australia.
I got letters from all over the ruddy state about this, and at that time I was interested in recordings, always been mad on music. I had a lot of Larry Adler's records and Robeson, all those sort of stuff, particularly Larry Adler's, and people liked those Larry Adler records, harmonica stuff. I used to put a lot of that on. And this'll make you laugh. I was using an 8-inch electromagnetic speaker for a microphone. And it all went over like a ton of bricks. And my wife at that time used to play the banjo. I used to put her on there to break in between the records. I always have a lot of fun.
Good morning. Good morning, sir. You have a very nice cafe here. Would it be possible for me to have a hot meal?
Yes, sir. Right this way, sir. There you are. I suppose you haven't eaten anything for a couple of hours or so, eh? Has your order been taken, sir?
No, not yet. What's on?
Here's the both of us, sir.
The what?
The menu.
Oh, yes. Now, I think I'll have, what's this? Pâté du foie gras.
Yes.
Oh, I'll have that anyhow.
Yes, sir. Beefsteak, eggs and chips, Joe. Lovely weather we're having for this time of the year, sir. As a rule, we get 9 months' rain and the wet season sets in. Do you take pizza?
Yes, please. Yes, please.
What kind do you prefer, China, Indian, or Ceylon?
Oh, anything. Say Ceylon.
Yes, sir. Milk or lemon?
Oh, milk, please.
Very good, sir. Ayrshire, Jersey, or Guernsey?
Oh, I don't mind. Any sort of milk does me.
Very good, sir.
And shake that steak up.
Yes, sir. Wallop the steak, Joe.
I don't mean that. I mean hurry up with the thing. I haven't all day to sit here.
Righty-o, sir. Your cup and choices, sir. We always give a free teacup reading after you've finished your meal, sir.
Oh, that's very interesting.
Yes, sir, you'll be surprised at some of the things we'll tell you.
I'm sure I would be surprised. Say, you've given me 2 knives.
Oh, yes. Well, you see, we're out of forks at the moment, sir.
The department didn't mind because you were getting experience, and that's what they wanted, you see. So, amateurs, in my opinion, are still around. Not because of all the other things that they do, but because basically the authorities are aware of the fact that they have a virtually inexhaustible pool of technical ability. And that's why amateurs still have some territory. Of course, what a lot of people don't know is that I'm talking about the general public, is that nearly every one of the bands that have been opened up, amateurs opened up, not the authorities, not the physics departments and so forth, amateurs. They did all the hard work, and as soon as they got one of these bands functional and working, they took it away from us and left us with a lousy little bit of territory about this size, you see. This went on and on and on. They're still at it.
A few years after the war, some amateurs were still trying to get back on the air to present their concerts. Bill Seavers.
We certainly had some great times, and I believe the public thoroughly enjoyed their programs. They were made, really, from stations using their own gear, their own time, and the expense, of course, was not thought of. But it was enjoyable, and we certainly had great times using Sunday's transmissions from one weekend to another. We hope, or we are trying to get back, but it looks a forlorn hope. So, although we have had asked by nervous people when we're going back on the air again, I'm afraid those days have gone.
In loudspeakers, you heard Otto Sandel, Ivor Morgan, Walter Exton, Bert Maddock, Leigh Cranch, Bill and Mai Seavers, and Val Harris. Our thanks to Mrs. Ilse Morgan and Chris Long for archival material used in this program. The interview with Charles McClurkin is from the ABC's Radio Archives. The program included excerpts from the Wireless Institute of Australia's cassette, The Sounds of Amateur Radio, and the rare recordings of the amateur broadcasters in Melbourne are from the Ivor Morgan collection at the Performing Arts Museum in Melbourne. And thanks to Walter Exton for the recordings of music and talks he made at his father's station, 2XN, in Lismore. In the next program, Making Radio Pay, we'll hear more about early broadcasting and how radio was sold over the air and door to door. Music for the series was written and performed by Kathy Peters. Readings by Scott McGregor and Michelle Forden. Production of Bright Sparks by Sharon Davis, Judy Lowry and Stephen Rapley for the ABC's Social History Unit.
You have been listening to experimental station VK3BY Melbourne. And that will conclude the transmission from the station for tonight. The station is owned and operated by the Holst Brothers of 27 Bamborough Road, Caulfield, SE7. And all reports, accompanied by the usual postage, will be suitably acknowledged. The station is now closing down until next Sunday dinner time at 12:30, when the usual test program will be transmitted. 3BY Melbourne, now closing down.